We have been studying what the Bible has to say about how we as Christians can stand firm against the attacks of Satan. And we've been looking at Ephesians chapter 6, verses 10 to 17, if you'd like to turn there with me. And so in Ephesians chapter 6, verses 10 to 17, he talks about spiritual warfare. And that passage is divided into five parts. He gives them the preparation, that is a preparation for battle with Satan, the enemy, Satan and his demons, the battle, how Satan works, how he attacks, the victory and the way to victory. And we've already looked at the first three points, and we've spent a lot of time in there. We talked about how we need to prepare for battle by being strong in the Lord, and we are strong in the Lord, verse 11, by putting on the full armor of God. We saw the enemy, that he is the devil. The Greek word is slanderer. He spends his time slandering God, lying about God. Jesus himself called him the father of lies. We saw that his weapon is schemes, which is strategic lies. Lies that he implants in the world. He implants in families. He implants in cultures. He implants in countries. He implants in people groups. He implants everywhere through the unbelieving world. Lies about God, about nature, about the creation, about the psychology of man, about physical abilities that we have, about mental abilities, about anything and everything that he can lie about. And the purpose is to confuse us, to get us to believe things that are against God, to get human beings to believe things that are against God so they'll act accordingly. That's his plan. That's his desire. His weapon is lies. And we said that his instrument is the unbelieving world. God has allowed him to blind the minds of unbelievers, and he uses them for his purposes. And it's not very difficult, because a blind person can be fed lies all the time. And from the moment that we are born into the world, we are hearing those lies. We hear them in our families. We hear them in our cities. We hear them in our schools, in our neighborhoods, through friends, through all the media. They're everywhere. And Satan is working to get us to believe false things. And he primarily attacks believers in four ways. And we looked at these in depth. We said number one, and we're just reviewing. He incites our fleshly desires within us through the unbelieving world around us. In us, we have fleshly desires. That's the flesh. It's not Satan. The desire to do something wrong is us. It's the flesh. What Satan does is he externally creates a lot of activities to stir up our flesh. It's all around us. And he does it through stirring up the flesh of unbelievers. Building a culture and a world around the flesh. What he wants is people to follow their fleshly desires. A unbelieving world engulfed in the flesh and the desires, doing fleshly activities, and in terms of our lives as Christians, to tempt us. So that we'll look around us and want to be involved in those things and tempt our kids and tempt everyone to do that. Secondly, we saw that he attempts to deceive us with lies through the beliefs and values of the unbelieving world around us. He knows that for us to fall into those things, we have to believe some kind of justification to do them. We have to have some kind of value to do them. The unbelievers have them. The unbelievers have beliefs and values to say, hey, it's okay. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you die. If it feels good, do it. All kinds of different things. And so what he's trying to do for us is he's trying to infect us with those lies. The world's full of them. That's what the world is. It's the lies of Satan through the unbeliever. Thirdly, we saw that he attempts to deceive us with a false Jesus, a false gospel through false Christians. And this, he spends a lot of time with young believers. And a false Jesus is Jesus that has been twisted and perverted, so it's not the biblical Jesus anymore. And you see this through all the cults. Fourthly, we saw that Satan also can at times physically afflict us or ones that we love, as we saw in Job, through illness, crimes, disasters, and primarily through persecution. We don't always know in terms of crimes and disaster and illness. Is it Satan? Is it just the fallen world? We don't know. In fact, we're not supposed to identify. What we're supposed to do is trust the Lord. But the Lord lets us know those things come in, and we need to see them as testing and trials, and then we need to trust the Lord through them. That's what God wants us to do. But also through persecution. And persecution, which is so obvious and so real in other parts of the world in terms of the physical, for us is much more subtle, and it tends to attack us through the psychological means. Okay, that's the preparation, the enemy, the battle. This morning we come to the victory and the way to victory. The victory, number four. What does God expect from us when we face temptations from Satan? He expects us to be victorious. And what kind of victory are we to have? Look at verse 11. Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. Take your stand means to stand firm. That's what that Greek word means. They've translated take your stand. There's various ways to translate it. But I think one of the best ways to really get the idea is to stand firm. Firm means strongly, so that you can't fall over. The opposite of standing is falling over. It's not running. There's no way to run. So get that out of your mind. You're not going to run from Satan. You can't run. Satan cannot take away our salvation. So it's not talking about falling out of the grace of God. You can if you're a child of God. What Satan can do is deceive us. That's what he wants. To get us to believe a lie, to get us involved in fleshly activity, so that our testimony for God doesn't shine the way that God desires. That's what he wants. That's the best he can do. In verse 13, Paul says, therefore put on the full armor of God, so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground. Verse 14, stand firm. At the end of verse 13, having done everything to stand. And what does stand firm means? To keep doing what you know is right. To know what is right and to do what is right. To follow the Lord. It's all the same thing. Satan is trying to knock you off of that. And so we need to stand firm. We need to stand firm in what we know to be true and in honoring the Lord in our lives. And keep pressing on to growing in the Lord. Now, that's the victory. Can we do it? Yes. And notice what he says in verse 13. Therefore, put on the full armor of God so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground. You can stand your ground. What's the day of evil? The day of evil is when you're struggling with a temptation. Whatever it is. That's the day of evil. And the day of evil can be a period of time when it just seems, sometimes it seems like we struggle with something, then we can overcome it. And we need to be able to stand your ground. And sometimes when we do, it's shaky. And we begin to see these things and we panic and we go, okay, no. I need to apply the scriptures the way I've always applied them. Nothing's changed. And then we need to apply them in our lives and allow the Lord to work as we put on the armor of God. Now, also notice here, you put the armor of God on before the day of evil. Verse 13, therefore, put on the full armor of God so that when the day of evil comes, when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground. This is how you put it on, as we're going to see. You commit yourself to it before you're tempted. Because the chances are, when you're tempted, you're not going to be that committed to it. So if you're not committed before, that's the worst time. You got to be committed before. You got to build your commitment every day. Your commitment needs to be a growing commitment. And I'll tell you, the thing that's helped me the most in my Christian life is to grow in my commitment. But we have to put on the armor before the day of evil. Now, let's go to the way to victory. And that's the last point. The way to victory. Go back to verse 10. He says, finally, be strong in the Lord and in his mighty power. Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. We need the Lord's power. How do we get the Lord's power? By putting on the armor of God. That is, if you put these characteristics in your life, you're going to be strong. And so we need to understand that the way to victory, to have the strength in the Lord, is to put on the full armor. Now, when we're talking about the armor of God, I mentioned to you that the armor of God is a metaphor. That is, the armor doesn't physically exist. It's not a mystical thing. It's a metaphor for certain characteristics that we need to have in our lives in order to combat the temptations of Satan through the world. To put on means that we are to develop a commitment that we are to commit ourselves to these characteristics. So what you're going to see as we go through this, I'm going to say basically this. You need to commit yourself to this characteristic, and that characteristic will keep you strong in the Lord and able to stand against Satan's lies and against his attacks. What are the six pieces of armor? What are the characteristics? The belt of truth, the breastplate of righteousness, the shoes of the preparation of the gospel of peace, the shield of faith, the helmet of salvation, the sword of the Spirit. Let's look at number one, the belt of truth. Now, this should sound very familiar. And why? Because truth, it's in the Bible. Holding fast to the truth. So these should be very familiar. All Paul is doing is bringing out certain key ones that you need to have to stand firm against Satan. All right, the belt of truth. Verse 14, he says this, "Stand firm then with the belt of truth buckled around your waist." To buckle the belt of truth around your waist means this. It is to commit yourself to know, understand, and live out the truth in your life as God has revealed it in the Scriptures. To know, understand, and live out the truth in your life as God has revealed in the Scriptures. And it's no coincidence that this is the first one he picks. The first commitment that we made that helped us come to Christ is a commitment. I want to know the truth, no matter what. Why would anybody come to Jesus? Because Jesus is true. Why would anybody want to cast themselves before God and say, God, I am a sinner hopelessly lost? Because we know it's true. We have to be committed to the truth. Now, what is truth? Truth is reality. If you looked up in a dictionary, you'd find truth is what is real. And falsehood is what is fantasy. We know as adults, Mickey Mouse doesn't exist. We know that we're not going to get up in the morning, put a blue and yellow and red suit on, and fly around like Superman. It's fantasy. When we talk about God's truth, a lot of people have this idea that God's truth is just this thing up here. It exists apart from our life, and we got to infuse it in our life. It's not what it is at all. What God reveals is what is actually happening. See? God created the world, and He created everything in the world. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. That's real. That's true. It doesn't matter if somebody tells us, well, it was a little amoeba and this, and it just kind of developed and all this stuff. That isn't real. One of us is wrong. And what God says is, I did it. I created it, and I'm telling you what actually happened. I'm not making it up. God deals with reality because God created it. God did it. The thing I want you to understand is this. We are to be committed to the truth wherever it takes us, even if we don't like it. Because you know what? There's a lot of Christians that haven't really submitted to the truth. They've submitted to the truth as far as they want to. And so the thing I want you to understand is when you put on the belt of truth, you define the truth through the Word, but you have to first be committed and understand the truth is reality. Look at John chapter 17, verse 17. It says, "Sanctify them by the truth. Your word is truth." Amen. He says, he's talking the high priestly prayer to the Father, and he's asking the Father to work in his disciples. And he says, "Sanctify them by the truth." And then he tells us how that's going to be done, through the word. Your word is truth. This is the only thing we can tell whether something's true or not. This is the grid through which we filter everything to find out if it's true or not. And why do we do that? Because we believe in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. And He's the only one that really knows. Right? But we need to commit ourselves to the truth. All of it. Every bit of it. And that's what I ask you. Are you really committed to the Word? Are you committed to go wherever it goes no matter what? Look at Psalm 119, verse 160. Psalm 119 is the psalmist, the Old Testament believer who's committed to the Word. And he gives us all the characteristics of someone who's committed to the Scriptures. So we can see this characteristic. Psalm 119, verse 160. He's talking here, he's praying, he's talking to the Lord. He says, "All your words are true, all your righteous laws are eternal." That is, they last forever because they're true. All your words are true. And then earlier he gives his commitment. It's one thing to acknowledge, yes, all your words are true, but what about you? Are you committed to them? Look at Psalm 119, verse 30. Now, this is how an Old Testament believer put on the belt of truth. And this is how we do it. It's the same way. Psalm 119, verse 30. He says, I have chosen the way of truth. What does that mean? I have set my heart on your laws. They're parallel statements. I have chosen. That's a choice that we make. Why? We have to do it. I have chosen to follow the word wherever it leads. Because it is the truth. We have to have that commitment. So that when a lie comes, we say, that's a lie. That is a lie. If we want to stand firm against Satan, that's what we need to do. Why? Our commitment to and knowledge of the truth guards us from believing Satan lies that indulging the lust of the flesh is not that bad. Not that bad. It's okay. It guards us from believing other lies of the world. They're everywhere. It guards us from believing a false Jesus and a false gospel from false Christians. And it guards us from doubting God, His love and His care, His sovereignty. We have faith in the truth. Right? Secondly, the breastplate of righteousness. Look at verse 14 of Ephesians 6. Not only do we need to be committed to the truth, God's truth, but we need to be committed to righteousness. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 14. He says, stand firm then with the belt of truth buckled around your waist, with the breastplate of righteousness in place. And again, I don't think the real issue is between breastplate and belt. It's just that these are the things that he mentioned. The issue is what the characteristic is. The characteristic is righteousness, personal, everyday righteousness. To put on the breastplate of righteousness means to commit yourself, there's commitment again, to commit yourself to following God's commandments, which is His way of living as revealed in the Scriptures as a regular pattern of your life. The thing you need to understand about righteousness, which helped me so much and will help you as well, is to understand that righteousness is not a bunch of do's and don'ts. It's a way of living. Take all of Christ's commands and line them up, and what you'll have is a way of living. Jesus said it this way, you want to know what my way of living is like? My way of living is loving one another. My way of living is loving your enemies. Yeah, I'm going to ask you to go even further. My way of living is forgiving one another. My way of living is not indulging the desires of the flesh. It's a way of living. When we teach our kids the do's and don'ts, they're not do's and don'ts, they're a way of living. Don't lie, don't cheat, don't steal. Those are ways of living. And I want you to see that righteousness is God's way of living. Why? Because it builds. Builds relationships, builds life, builds strength in the Lord. And that's what righteousness is in its true nature. Sin destroys. And putting on the breastplate is, I want to be committed to that, even if the people around me aren't. Now, here's the problem. Satan will use people around you to tempt you not to. You can be at work and somebody can betray you at work or lie about you and you want to lie about them. You want to gossip. I'll destroy them. I'll destroy everything about them. I'll destroy your reputation. I'm going to give them everything and they think they're messing with the wrong guy. You know what? That's exactly what Satan wants. So we need to put on the breastplate. Why? Because when those happen, what do? Hey, I'm committed to righteousness. That's what makes the difference in my life. I don't want to fall into that, even though I have been sinned against. I still need to honor the Lord. When we do that, our commitment to righteousness guards us from indulging the lust of the flesh when we're tempted by Satan, because we're committed to righteousness, right? It guards us from believing lies of the world, that righteousness is irrelevant. That's what people say, don't do that. That's irrelevant. Nice guys finish last. It guards us from believing a false righteousness, which comes from a false gospel. That is works and all the other stuff. That isn't going to make you righteous. It guards us from turning away from the Lord for escape or pleasure when we're suffering. The shoes of the gospel of peace. Look at verse 15. And he says, and with your feet fitted with the readiness that comes from the gospel of peace. The readiness that comes is just preparation again. It's just a repeat of the overall theme, and he does it for emphasis. It just says we need repair. by putting on the shoes of the gospel of peace. Now, what is the gospel of peace? Well, it's easy. We know what gospel is, good news. And what is peace? Of peace. Peace with who? Peace with God. Look at Romans chapter 5, verse 1. The gospel of peace is the good news that we have peace with God through Christ's death on the cross. Therefore, since we have been justified through faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ. We have peace with God through the death of Christ. That's salvation. And what that means is this. We have peace with God, but guess what? God is at peace with us. Every bit of anger and wrath that God has wanted to spend on sinful us was spent on the cross. God has spent all of His wrath against you on the cross. So He is at peace with you. He loves you. And when He disciplines you, He disciplines you calmly because He's at peace with you. And that's good for us to know, isn't it? Now what that means is this. Go to Hebrews chapter 4, verse 14. We got problems. We're in a fallen world and we can't control it. We have a flesh and we're struggling with that. We've got Satan against us. Man, that is a lot of trouble. And we're going to need to turn to the Lord. And when we do, we need to know He's going to be there. That's what peace with God means. Peace with God means this. If God is at peace with us, He's not going anywhere. He's not going to run off. He's always going to be there. And that's what this verse is based on. Look at Hebrews chapter 4, verse 14. Therefore, since we have a great high priest who has gone through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold firmly to the faith we have. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses. But we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet was without sin. What the weakness he's talking about, what's the weakness in the context? It's not physical weakness. It's weakness of flesh. It's when we're struggling with sin. That's when he's there. Notice what he says. So let us then approach the throne of grace with confidence so that we may receive what we need the most. What is it? Mercy. And find grace to help us in our time of need. The peace with God we have is through Jesus Christ. And it means that because we're His children, you can always go to the Lord. And He will always there. Lots and lots of mercy. Isn't that great? You have to believe it. He is. Now here's the other thing. Satan wants you to believe that the Lord isn't always going to be there. This says this. Let us approach the throne of grace with confidence anytime. That's the implication. Anytime you have a need, go and approach the Lord. He's always there, always to find mercy. Even in the deepest struggle, when I'm struggling with sin, yes. Even when I've done the worst thing, yes. Because even if you've done the worst thing, the Lord will be there to help you pick up the pieces. Satan wants to believe he's not. He will be there because he has peace with us. Let's look at number 4, the shield of faith, verse 16. He says, in addition to all this, take up the shield of faith with which you can extinguish all the flaming arrows of the evil one. In addition to all this, take up the shield of faith. Now to take up, you don't put on a shield like you put on armor. You take it up. Again, just another analogy to kind of bring out what armor is all like, but doesn't really have any meaning beyond. We need to commit ourselves to the shield of faith. Now what is the shield of faith? Well, it represents faith. And what is faith? Faith is trust and confidence in God that all He has revealed in His Word is true, and it is relying on God and what He says in His Word. If you do not believe with all your heart that what God says is true, then you're not going to put on the shield of faith. You're not going to take it up. You're committed to righteousness. You're committed to the truth. But you've got to trust it. You've got to trust God. And ultimately, we know that we come to salvation by faith. And we have to live by faith. And this isn't salvation faith. This is daily living faith. Every day when we wake up in the morning, it is time to trust the Lord, right? It's time to say, okay, whatever happens, Lord, I'm going to trust you. And then as we walk through the day, we live our lives by faith. We face a situation, we're tempted, we live by faith. We face a decision, we live by faith. And whatever circumstances we have, we need to live by it. Look at Proverbs chapter 3, and I want to show you what God says that faith is all about on a daily basis. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 5. And this is a statement of what a believer in all ages, what their faith is all about. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 5, Solomon says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will make your paths straight." Now, this teaches four important truths about faith. Number one, trusting the Lord is all about trusting the Lord with all of your heart. There's no such thing as partial faith. You either believe or you don't believe. And you say, "How do I know I believe?" Because it always results in action. Always results in action. If God makes a promise, you need to believe that with all your heart. You need to set your heart on it. You need to put your heart, "I am going to believe the Lord and live my life according to it." That's all your heart. There's no mystery about it. It's you either believe it or you don't. And if you believe it, you're going to do something about it. There was a story told. It's not probably a real story, but it's a story told about a fellow, and he was an atheist. And he had fallen off a cliff, and he had fallen down and grabbed a tree. You might have heard this. And he's holding on to the tree. He says, "Lord, Lord, I'll believe you if only you'll save me. I promise I'll believe you." And a voice came out of heaven and said, "Let go." That's what the Lord does in our life. He says, "Okay, you're going to need to let go and let me control this. And I'll do it." Because what Satan wants to do is Satan wants to substitute a sinful solution to your problem. You got a problem? There's only two choices: God's way or Satan's way. God's way or man's way. Are we going to follow the Lord or are we going to follow another way? And it's a substitute false solution. It's a solution that's only for the moment. It's a solution that may be for this life but won't glorify the Lord. The only way you can follow the Lord is to believe Him with all your heart. All of it. Secondly, Proverbs 3 says, notice there, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. If you're going to trust the Lord with all your heart, you're going to have to turn aside from your own perceptions of reality. And you're going to have to allow the Lord's perception of reality to tell you the way it is. All of the media and everything is trying to cause us to believe that certain things are certain ways. And the Lord's saying, no, it's not just that way. There's more to life than just this. And so we need to see it as it truly is. There's a right way of doing things. And isn't that what we do with our kids? We're trying to teach them there's a right way to handle money and a wrong way to handle money. There's a right way to handle your relationships and a wrong way to handle your relationships. And it isn't what the world says it is. And so God says, "I have a picture that only I can bring. And it's important that you trust me and don't just lean on your own understanding." So it's very important that we as Christians don't lean on our own understanding. But we take the Word of God at face value and trust Him with all of our heart with that. Thirdly, this will require you to acknowledge God and His ways as first priority. In all your ways, acknowledge Him. What that means is in everything you do, you need to acknowledge God's sovereignty over that and His rule over that. Everything needs to be given to Him. And lastly, and He promises He'll make your path straight. Now, what is a straight path? It is a path of righteousness that shines the light of God in this world. See, here's the thing. A straight path, first of all, is not a life of riches. It isn't a life of fame. It is a life that displays the fruit of the Spirit. A straight path is a path that reflects Christ. So what do we need to do? We need to realize if we're going to trust the Lord, we've got to trust Him with all our hearts, and we've got to acknowledge Him in all our ways, and He'll make our path straight. That's how we wield the shield of faith. When we do that, Our commitment is trusting God that what He's revealed in His Word is true and live our lives according to His Word. One, it guards us from indulging the lust of the flesh by trusting God that His way is the best way. We're not going to want to indulge because we're going to look at it and go, that's not the best way. That destroys. Number two, it guards us from believing the lies of the world because we're trusting in what God has revealed, not what the world says is good and valuable. Number three, it guards us from trusting in a false Christ, a false gospel, and false scriptures. Many people turn away from the true Christ because they don't want to do what the true Christ wants. They slide into sin, and all of a sudden they're giving up the faith, which they never really had. For if it was true saving faith, they wouldn't. And lastly, four, our commitment to trusting God guards us from turning away from the Lord for escape or pleasure when we are suffering because we're trusting God to work in our lives as He has promised in His Word. Much sin comes from just simply trying to escape. And a lot of sin is escaping things. And Satan uses that. You can have momentary pleasure to escape. A lot of it is that. Number five. The fifth piece of armor, the fifth characteristic is the helmet of salvation. Look at Ephesians chapter 6, verse 17. He says, take the helmet of salvation. To take up the helmet of salvation is to continually hold on to the precious truths that you are saved, that you cannot lose your salvation, and that your salvation will bring a future of eternal blessing. What is the helmet of salvation? The helmet of salvation is trusting God, holding on to the precious truths that you are saved. It's the assurance of salvation. It is that you are saved, that you cannot lose your salvation, and that your salvation will bring a future of eternal blessing. And I want to look at these briefly, for the idea of salvation isn't just be saved, get saved, be delivered from sin, everything's fine. The idea of salvation is that we come into salvation.